Hello, and welcome to the latest edition of the University Registrar's Talking About Stuff podcast. And in this episode, a longer one, as there is so much to talk about, I'm joined by someone who is not in fact a registrar, but the founder, editor-in-chief, and CEO of Wonky, Mark Leach. We start with Mark's time as a student and subsequently sabbatical officer at the University of Kent, where he first became fascinated with university committees and bureaucracy. Mark credits Wes Streeting, at that time the Vice President for Education at NUS, for making policy wonkery sexy. And indeed, Mark ended up working in the HE policy unit set up by Streeting with the aim of improving NUS's impact on the sector. After NUS, Mark had a stint at Hefke and came up with the idea of an HE policy blog, although was not yet in a position to start it properly as his employer was not supportive. However, having then joined University Alliance as a policy advisor, his new organisation welcomed the idea of him writing an HE policy blog, and he started publishing his and others' articles in 2011. Everything, though, had to go on hold after that as he took up an offer to work for Shabana Mahmood, who was then Shadow HE Minister under Ed Miliband and needed help to develop Labour's HE brief. After that exciting period, ended by a reshuffle, Mark took the plunge and decided to start Wonky in earnest, with his initial concerns being how to get noticed and be useful for the sector. The first step was starting a Monday morning HE briefing, which is where things suddenly took off, and which Mark now regards as the single most important step for the development of Wonky. From here, Wonky grew rapidly as it filled a genuine need in the sector. We conclude with Mark's confession about his fondness for the sector's pageantry. He is a sucker for gowns, maces, hats and hoods, and believes these distinctive HE traditions need to be celebrated and retained. It's a long episode, but I do hope you agree it's a really good conversation. Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the increasingly improbably named podcast, University Registrars Talking About Stuff. And this time it's my huge pleasure to introduce Mark Leach. Mark is Chief Executive, Editor-in-Chief and Founder of Wonky, which many of you will know as a prominent national and indeed international higher education website and repository of all things exciting relating to higher education. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you, Paul. Absolute pleasure to be on your podcast. But I do wish you wouldn't list all those job titles, because it's kind of a bit embarrassing. I kind of hum the theme tune, write the theme tune, because I'm also, you know, I'm also director of IT and, you know, HR and all of those things as well. You know, so we could make a very long list. It wouldn't make a lot of sense.
We could make a very long list, but that's the nature of a small high-powered startup these days. You know, you do all the jobs for sure. But it's great to have you on, and we will talk a wee bit about the development of Wonky and how it's grown over the years in a moment. But firstly, it'd be really interesting just to talk about how you ended up here, because you, in a sense, followed a traditional trajectory for a former student union sabbatical officer of going into a kind of policy realm. But how did you view it as your career? Is that how you saw it playing out after your sabbatical year at Kent?
Well, I did, absolutely. But actually, at the time, it wasn't as traditional as it was now. So this all started when I was at Kent, as a student, getting involved with the students' union. Particularly interested in education and everything that was going on there. So I got myself on a bunch of committees and I was a course rep and I got to go on faculty committees, and I was just endlessly fascinated by the bureaucracy and the kind of the politics between some of the staff. So, you know, people who, you know, they teach you most of the week and then you see them kind of like, you know, quarrelling at a kind of departmental meeting, and I found it really fun to kind of look behind. It felt like I was looking behind the kind of curtain a little bit, and I absolutely loved that. I felt like I kind of got a much better grip of what was going on at university, and as a result, and then I got involved with the students' union, and I was involved with kind of student politics as well, kind of alongside that. So I also set up the Labour Club at University of Kent. It's been dormant for many, many years. This was 2003 when I kind of rebooted that when I was my first year at Kent. And so then I was also, as a parallel, getting involved with National Labour Student stuff. So and going to NUS conference and things like that, which also kind of really expanded my kind of hinterland of interest in education policy and politics, which is kind of my kind of the sweet spot of things I'm interested in. But I'm mentioning that because it wasn't that usual for sabbatical officers to kind of stay in the sector as it has become over time. And it's for a few reasons that kind of trend was emerging right at that very point. So I could put it down to a few factors, one being the indefatigable Wes Streeting, who kind of made policy cool again. And he was a kind of rising star at NUS, now Shadow Health Secretary. He talked about higher education policy in a interesting and exciting way, in a way that no one had heard in a long time, and got a lot of people very excited and motivated to get involved with student politics and their universities as a result. And he was unashamedly a policy wonk.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah.
And the kind of unique quality about Wes is that he's, you know, an amazing communicator and absolutely kind of masterful at politics itself. But he also, you know, he can digest a kind of policy brief better than most. And he made that, you know, he made that kind of sexy.
He is, I'm sure he will be flattered at that, but he's also an incredibly enthusiastic individual as well. And I think that period was a time in which, you know, higher education was something that, you know, was part of the mainstream political discourse, but also, as you say, it had enthusiastic people engaging with it, like Wes and other people. Yeah, and I can understand you being excited by that. Of course, for me, it was just a job at that time.
Yeah. There another couple of factors as well that have led to that. So in that trend of sabbatical officers getting more involved with policy, one of that was kind of the new quality regime that was coming in the early noughties. Yeah. That looked to involve students a lot more, and that directly gave rise to a kind of type of education sabbaticals that were particularly kind of policy wonky, you know, before this is long before wonky existed, and you know, they would kind of coalesce at NUS meetings and those sorts of things, and write motions at NUS conference, and you know, go, you know, and have kind of, you know, fabulously kind of wonky conversations about policy. And it was, you know, the way that the environment had shifted to, you know, starting to focus its, you know, attention on student engagement and you know, in that regime. As I say, that brought a bunch of people who were very interested in HE policy through that system, you know, from sabbatical to university or into policy or into NUS.
So you went to NUS after you'd finished your sabbatical then, as a policy officer, is that right?
Well, I had a doomed attempt to run for president, which I knew I wasn't going to win. I don't quite remember why I actually ended up running when I knew I couldn't possibly win. I was up against fabulously popular sports ab, who was also president of, you know, multiple other societies, and there was absolutely no chance. I don't know why I even bothered. I went directly then to NUS. So this was Wes had taken over as vice president of education, which encompassed higher education, and at the time, you know, NUS is now sadly seven people, and you know, can come, it's a story for another podcast probably, but at the time it was, you know, kind of sprawling organization in London, and it had contracted a bit, and they'd refocused around some new priorities, and one of the new things that Wes was introducing was a kind of a higher education policy unit, which had, there was an old expert who'd been there for a long time who'd left in the changes, but and there was no HE policy unit going on at all at NUS. And Wes's mission was to kind of create that as, you know, partly as a kind of secretariat to him, but also to massively improve NUS's relationship with the higher education sector, which had was it wasn't bad. It was just not very functional and a bit weird. Mm. And given how much was going on at the time, like student engagement quality and those sorts of things, it's a huge opportunity to engage. And, you know, people forget about this time, but I mean, I look back at it quite fondly in terms of, you know, policy. So much more policy happened inside the higher education sector, often led by HEFCE with its many strategic subcommittees. I had an absolute blast going along to every single one of those, from kind of quality to degree classifications, the Burgess Group, all sorts of things, absolutely all sorts of things. And learning about kind of every aspect of HE policy I could, and just having quite a lot of fun, and coming back to NUS and writing briefings for students' unions about what was going on and how to engage with it and all those sorts of things. And Wes was, you know, very, very supportive. Other characters around those days that kind of also partly responsible for this. So Jim Dickinson, who now works for us at Wonky, runs Wonky SUs. So he was a director at NUS that was kind of making that happen. So I work for Jim, and now he works for me.
Now he works for you, yeah.
but he was, you know, he was responsible for kind of operationalizing that, you know, that plan to kind of sort out HE policy at NUS's side. And I mentioned, you know, the fact that there was some person who'd, you know, was an expert sitting there, but they were actually. It turned out completely freelancing as well. So I went in and I went to a meeting, I remember very early on, and they were talking about introducing student reviewers on into institutional review. And this was, you know, that was at the time, it was actually controversial. It's funny to think that. Incidentally, as an aside, the person arguing the other side was Vivian Stern, who was doing policy at UK. And I don't think her heart was really in that argument, but her brief was to go and argue against this.
But that's just extraordinary, isn't it, when you think about it?
It is funny. It's ridiculous to think. Yeah, absolutely ridiculous to think. I'm sure she doesn't even remember it. But NUS, the person who'd been going to these meetings on behalf of NUS, had also been arguing against it. And so when I started arguing for it, people looked at me and were like, oh, well, hold on, that's not the NUS position. The person who'd been going on behalf of NUS had genuinely been saying that's a bad idea, it's meant to be peer review and students aren't peers. It was in the minutes I saw this was the NUS representative. I went back and I told Wes and Jim, and they were absolutely incandescent. So we made quite a show of reversing that position, you know, pulling up the handbrake very quickly. But that was brilliant, because, you know, I got a first, you know, really at the very start a sense of, you know, how policy gets made inside higher education. And why I feel fondly about it is partly because I guess there was so much more a sense of agency in the sector to create policy for itself than we have today.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I mean, what you captured there is a kind of, okay, it may have been a bit tortured, but a kind of real sense of you know, vibrancy and excitement and creativity and challenge, which, yeah, it's very different now. There isn't, you know, there aren't, you know, kind of ideas fermenting around. It's just, it feels a lot more stark and less creative and interesting in many respects.
Yeah, and I think obviously the big change being replacement of HEFCE with or RFS, which, you know, just conducts its business very differently. You know, it isn't about building consensus over policy. It's, you know, here is the policy. And as you know, on Wonky, we spend a lot of time tracing the roots of it. Sometimes it comes from, you know, the pages of a Daily Telegraph. Sometimes it comes from, you know, the random idea of a minister. Sometimes it comes from HERA, and for good reason. But it is a real mixture. Very little of it is because it's come from a consensus built amongst people who work in higher education about how to make the sector better regulated, better quality regime, better experience for staff, for students. Very little of it comes that from that direction, and I think the sector has suffered a lot as a result of that.
Yeah, and I think the your reference to HEFCE is you know, a key part of that change. And you were on secondment to HEFCE for a bit, working on the Settle project there, is that right?
Oh, yeah. So I was at NUS for a few years and then probably not got bored of it, but definitely was looking to get to the next stage of my career in HE policy. By that point, I'd decided very much that's what I wanted to do. And that is around the time I also came up with Wonky, because I was looking for kind of other things. And I started thinking about it and what I would do with an HE blog. Because also this was a period of time where blogs themselves were becoming very popular. So it was kind of the hot new kind of medium.
That was the case once, listeners.
It felt like a natural kind of thing to do that would get a bit of interest. The other thing that was going on at the time was so David Willetts, the Brown Review, and all the things that would flow from there. So I went to Hefke on secondment to, as I say, kind of another sort of feather in my bow on policy. The job I had to do there was wrap up the Settles project and do an evaluation of it, which was super interesting, actually. And I think another kind of anachronism for HE policy wants, but this was, you know, a program where the end of the day, it cost something like £300 million. I think I'm remembering that right. For, you know, a bunch of projects with, you know, some were very good, very interesting, but, you know, very little impact or legacy. And there was that kind of money around to do that kind of thing.
It is extraordinary. I must admit, it was one of those initiatives that I was more than a little sceptical about at the time. And I think that whilst there was, you know, there were some really great pockets of really good stuff that went on, I think the long-term impact, as you look at it from, you know, kind of 12 or so years on, is very limited, right? Mm. I mean, these things just didn't have longevity.
No, and it was a very different era. You know, there was money sloshing around and solution, you know, it was, well, how can we spend as much money as possible to, you know, solve some problems? And, you know, I mean, it's just a, you know, very, very different, very, very different time. But some good work that came out of it. And I learned a lot about procurement and some other things on the face of it, quite boring, but I had to, you know, procure the evaluation and things like that. Yeah. And that was actually quite, you know, quite good kind of exercise to do. And there at Hefke, I met lots of interesting people who, you know, also, you know, many of them still around, you know, in different parts of the sector. Yeah. David Kernahan, who then now comes to work at Wonky. David Sweeney, of course, and various other people who, yeah, it was a good time. There was a lot of really great people there. Some of them still at RFS, I think, kind of long suffering. Many of others have long since left.
And you went from there to University Alliance, is that right?
Yes. Well, actually, so while I was there, I was started actively work on Wonky as a blog. So at the time, while I was there, the Brown Review reported, and I was sitting there thinking, oh, I would just love to be able to say what I think about all of this, because it's so interesting. But I did ask my line manager at Hefke. She first didn't know what a blog was. That was the first barrier, and was very nervous about the conversation. The words I was saying, and blog and Twitter and writing about politicians, very nervous, looked very scared and worried, and you know, came back to me having investigated what some of those words are, and told me that I should never speak of them again as long as I'm at Hefke, that they're not sorts of words that make people very comfortable. It was only a secondment for I think 10 or 11 months anyway, so I thought, well, you know, I was actively applying for new jobs after that. And I went to University Alliance as a policy advisor, and they were incredibly happy for me to do it. I said to them on my first day, which was January 2011, I said, you know, by the way, I've been working on this idea of a blog about HE policy. Have you got any problems with me doing that on the side? And they said, no, not at all. Crack on. And that was... that was the year of David Willetts's big HE white paper. And it was good because, you know, there was quickly a very good reason for Wonky to exist. And I started writing some articles in my spare time. And then other people got in touch and said, oh, can I write on Wonky? And I said, sure, that sounds great. So they did as well. And that's literally how it started. And I had a great time at University Alliance. The biggest thing that helped me there was actually working in research policy, whereas previously I'd been at NUS for many years and thinking a lot about student experience, quality, those sorts of things. So being kind of thrust into research policy was extremely helpful and gave me a real depth of understanding on that side of things. And that, I'm really glad that that happened, because it just rounded out my kind of view of policy a lot better and gave me a whole new set of networks as well. Lots of really great vice chancellors who were in the Alliance at the time. It's many, yeah. many which since left, or many institutions since left the Alliance, but there were some really, really good ones at the time. And there was a tipping point. I don't remember exactly when it was, but there was a tipping point when I was going to sector events and things on behalf of the Alliance, as a policy person. And there was a tipping point where people started talking to me more about what they'd read on Wonky than the University Alliance. And actually that started to become a bit awkward. And I'm not sure, I sort of kept that a bit from my colleagues at the Alliance.
Naturally.
Though they were very supportive, very friendly. And I, very happy for them to hear that now. And they wouldn't be surprised at all. They've all, been very friendly to Wonky for this whole journey. It did start to become a little bit awkward and it wasn't clear to me. And this was a long time before I could see any route to making what I did. Wouldn't have even, do you know what? It probably wouldn't have even occurred to me at the time. If you said to me, Mark, if people are interested in Wonky, why don't you turn it into a company and, those kind of things. It wouldn't have occurred to me. I wouldn't have seen a path to doing that.
That's really interesting, because just before you said that, I was imagining you were going to say that's when I started thinking and beginning to plan for the establishment of Wonky as a this big organization.
I'd love to say it was a whole plan and it was all worked out. No, I mean it really, it was a success. I thought of it as a successful hobby, and I was quite pleased with it. But the point at which it started to become awkward professionally. I didn't really have a solution to that. And I, in my wildest dreams, I mean, if it occurred to me, I would have thought, well, that is a absolute pipe dream. There's no way I'm going to be able to monetize this and be able to pay my salary. I was only, I think my initial, I was on £30,000 a year or something like that. And that's what, when I did end up setting up Wonky as a business, that's what I was trying to achieve, as if I can just pay my salary of £30,000. That was the original business plan, was can I raise enough to pay me to match my salary of £30,000 from the University Alliance.
And now here you are with the yacht and the mansion and the helicopter.
That's right, yeah, the Wonky helicopter. That's right, exactly. So then there was a bit of a spanner in the works which came along right in the middle of this. Well, so just reaching that tipping point I was talking about, where people were interested in it, then I got a whole new professional opportunity.
This was with Shabana, was it?
That's right. So Shabana Mahmood was Shadow Universities Minister. Ultimately, she was Shadow Universities and Science Minister as well. She just had universities. And this was a time, if you think back, Ed Miliband was leader of the Labour Party, and everyone was building towards what would be the 2015 general election. And a sense that Labour might actually win that, although obviously in history shows that it didn't. but Shabana, MP for Birmingham Ladywood, Claire Short's old seat, people I think underestimate what it's like to be in opposition. You don't get any resources, any money at all, any help. You're thrust into these positions and you're just left to get on with it. And Shabana, had a bunch of meetings with people in the sector and realised that she was going to need some extra help, given her enormous kind of caseload in Birmingham Ladywood. Lots of big issues there she was dealing with. There needed to be some help to help run the higher education brief. And also to stop it getting subsumed into the shadow business department, as such as it is, or the office, which was run by Chakuramuna. And Shabana was keen to kind of plot her own way through that. So she started talking to people like Andy Westwood and other people who'd worked for Labour when it was in government previously. And they said, okay, let's see if we can figure out a way of doing this, I think it's really important that Labour has a good opposition on HE issues, particularly if it's going to be heading into government. So kind of big sort of scrabbling round was done. Some peers donated some money and some other things were moved around, some Shabana's staffing allowance. And, you know, it was all kind of strung together on absolute kind of shoestring to make it work. But, you know, it was just such an interesting opportunity. It was obvious that I couldn't write on Wonky while I was doing that, because anything I would say would be, you know, kind of used evidence against me and the Labour Party and Shabana. So I kept Wonky warm, occasionally would publish a few things. But, you know, and I was only with Shabana for 18 months. I mean, it felt like many years. But I was sad to have to kind of pause the Wonky project. But I did have an absolute blast working with Shabana, because it basically filled in the rest of the network that I didn't yet have in HE. And what was fantastic was, you know, people would just take you so seriously. I mean, possibly too seriously, but people would, you know, people were extremely generous with their time, with their ideas. You know, that's one of the best days I had. David Watson came to office and I just had a one-on-one with him for probably 3 hours about how we could do something in a kind of flexible lifelong learning kind of space. And he had a bunch of ideas and a bunch of stuff, and it was so interesting. And things like that, you know, people would just come and share their thoughts, and, you know, Shabana and I would talk about them and figure out what, you know, what to do about it.
Because that's when you are, you know, a credible opposition, right, which happens periodically, then, you know, people from different parts of, you know, in this case, our sector will, you know, see an opportunity to influence future policy and will therefore, you know, want to engage really seriously. And, you're right in a sense. I mean, you will get a feeling it's just, you know, it's just me in a room, you know, but actually the potential to filter that and to, you know, translate it through what will become, you know, potentially, you know, a minister of state is remarkable. And it is extraordinary that actually happens. And it's, I find it, you know, really exciting and encouraging that ideas do emerge that way. Because if they had to go through, you know, you talked earlier about, you know, your excitement about committees and bureaucracy and whatever, but if things all had to go through that route all the time, then the really good ideas would never make it, would they?
Absolutely.
It just wouldn't happen.
You know, a lot of the HE sector also really underestimates, you know, that kind of power. And the best engagements, you know, we had were when people in the sector, and I do remember them, you know, who said, you know, here's some solutions, here's some policy, you know, you can do this. It's not going to cost anything. It's going to meet your status objections on the social purpose of university, or regulation, on other things. It was people who came in either who didn't understand their power there and just wanted to tell us, you know, about the good projects they've got at university, you know, verbally, as if we're going to take that on board or do anything with it at all. It's just a way, you're just using up air. Or in the worst cases, actually be quite hostile and patronising. So we, you know, we were saddled with this policy of £6,000 fees, reducing fees to £6,000 that Ed Miliband had announced a couple of years previously. And we weren't allowed to move away from it. We were only allowed to sort of give a, well, not really allowed, but we gave a wink and a nod to people to let them know this was a holding pattern position. We also, in fairness, we did say that, you know, and this was the official line, that, you know, the money would have been made up via a teaching grant. So it wouldn't have been a cut, and it would have been certainly a lot better now than, you know, being a lot less reliant on a frozen fee. If that 6K had come into play in 2015 and stayed frozen, but the money was topped up, then it would be much less politically problematic, as I say, to keep that top up going, and not, you know, not continue to defund the sector in the way that's happening year on year now with the frozen fee. So I think the sector's pushback against it was extreme and unnecessary, and in history, I think, shows that it would have been a much better option than the situation they're in now. But the hostility we had from some quarters, when we would start the meeting to say, you know, guys, 6K, we know what it is, you're not unhappy with it, but it's not on the table for this meeting. You know, we can't change that. It comes out of the leader's office, you know, and then they would spend the next half an hour just talking about it. you know, it's like, well, you've wasted the time, and you're not going to be invited back. You know,
it's a
shame. And then there were other occasions where, unfortunately, Shabana, you know, being a young female Muslim politician, was treated kind of quite shockingly, quite you know, I don't know if patronizing doesn't quite capture actually what some of these engagements were. And I won't name any names. A lot of these people are still around. A lot of them have retired. But, you know, we would go on a lot of visits to universities. We would meet lots of vice chancellors. We would meet lots of important people. And, you know, some were fantastic and helpful and friendly and, you know, interesting and helped advance our thinking. And others were catastrophic. And I was sitting there actually embarrassed for the higher education sector for the first time ever. In watching how badly some individuals treated Shabana, and you know, it was awkward, because you know, I put these kind of visits together, so I got the blame. But the same, you know it really brought home to me, you know, the best of higher education and its ability to engage with politics, and the absolute worst. And I did see it all there.
Yeah. No, I'm afraid I can imagine it only too keenly. So that was a relatively short-lived period, though, wasn't it? But action-packed, as you say. So what happened after that, then?
Well, so out of nowhere, there was a reshuffle, and Shabana found herself in Ed Bull's shadow chancellor shadow team, and you know, that kind of. That sort of the way the job had been constructed, with a bit of donation from here and blah, 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 just obviously just kind of completely melted away. You know, I mean, literally in an afternoon, I was out. I think we worked out, I could have stayed and worked for Shabana for, I think we worked out something like £14,000 a year to work on tax policy. And I just thought, you know, I'm not here to do that. That's so depressing. I've got to just get out of this, really. Basically no money and something that's going to bore me, and I'm not an expert in, and everything else just isn't what I want to do. I still, you know, my center of gravity was in you know, higher education. And I did have a real think about what to do. I did apply for some full-time jobs, and I got some interviews for some jobs in higher education, policy, public affairs, those kind of things. And none of them came to anything. And everyone was saying to me, well, what are you talking about, Mark? Why don't you do wonky? It took me, I think, 2 or 3 months, though, because it was actually quite a big leap to start working for Wonky full time, and to imagine what it could be if, you know, it had that level of attention, and to not see any obvious way that I'm going to have any salary at all for the foreseeable future. And I had a mortgage, even by the small mortgage compared to these days. But, you know, thankfully, Debbie, my partner, now wife, had a pretty decent job. So she worked at NUS, and we met there. By this point, she was working for the University of Bedfordshire as chief of staff to Bill Rammell, the then vice chancellor. It was a pretty interesting job, and pretty well paid, actually. So we did the numbers, and we worked out that I could work for Wonky for something like 6 months before I absolutely had to have brought in enough revenue to start topping us up, and you know, otherwise that was going to be a risk to our mortgage. So, and everyone said, you know, don't go and work in a university, you know, you've got Wonky, there's an opportunity here, people responding to this, you know, make it to a thing. So yeah, I just one day got out of bed in the morning and said, this is my job now. This is what I do. I'm editor of Wonky is now a job. It's not just something I do on Sunday afternoons. And it was a bigger mental leap than I imagined it would be, actually, to do that. And yeah, that's where I started. I just started building.
So having made that mental leap then, and it was still at that time, I'm going to say, just a blog, because it was a collection of contemporary articles about higher education of one kind or another, right? Yeah. And you'd have got more and more people involved and writing with you. But to then, you know, decide how you're going to make some money out of it, how you're going to build it. How did you start thinking about what you wanted it to be then? Because I mean, your overriding was concern, presumably, was how am I going to make some money in order to pay myself?
Yeah, that was my number one concern. But the actually bigger concern was, how do we get noticed? You know, so what I didn't know how I was going to make money, but I knew that if we got in front of enough people, and we were useful enough to enough people, then I would be able to come up with some business. So the first thing I did was start the Monday morning HE briefing. Now Wonky Mondays, and this was email newsletters were in their kind of infancy, but there was an emerging space, and I saw an opportunity in the way that, you know, blogs were when I first set up Wonky. Started the Monday morning HE briefing, and that just it just took off like absolute wildfire. I mean, it's the single most important thing I've ever done at Wonky. It literally, if I hadn't have done that, there would be no Wonky business today, because what that did, it just caught fire. I think there was just obviously a space for, you know, something free, easy accessible. What you need to know, what's going to happen, what has just happened, and you know, kind of slightly what to think about it in the kind of editorializing. But that tapped into a need. I can't pretend that I knew that there would be interest in it. I can't pretend that I realized that it would, you know, be that kind of powerful. And that's really what gave us the start, because that took off, and I realized that I could do a daily briefing on the back of that. I had more than enough content, and then I would also need to charge for that. And that's essentially the start of the Wonky business model, which is a kind of freemium model. So we give away lots of things for free. Now there's a podcast, the website's massively expanded. We do free online events, things like that, and we charge for kind of a premium tier of things. So that's the kind of essential business model hasn't changed since then. So the Monday briefing, the daily briefing, the diciest part ever of Wonky's life was when I was doing the daily briefing basically all myself every day. And I had to do this, and we knew each other. And so you would see me at dinners and events with my laptop out, literally writing it, you know, midnight, God knows when, and every day, never stopped. You know, if I was ill, wouldn't matter. Like, you know, for me, the consistency of getting it out every day was the absolute critical thing. People had to trust it, but I had to get enough subscribers. So I could hire another editorial person, which I did, and I hired David Morris as soon as I had enough money in the bank to pay his monthly salary. He was a bright young thing at the time from NUS, and now has gone on to great things in the Welsh government. And from having one other person, that just completely changed everything. Then I could focus a bit more on developing a business in other ways, and start growing from there.
And it has really grown. But Again, this is with hindsight, right? But when you think where you are now, if people are and there can't be many of them about who've not heard of Wonky, I mean, how do you describe it? Because it was, you know, in the early days, a blog, and then it was, you know, a daily newsletter, as you say. But how do you articulate it now?
Yeah, well, it sort of depends who I'm talking to. So I've got a 4-year-old just started school this term, and there's a lot more kind of like chats around the school gates and the sort of the children's parties and things like that. And because most of we've had COVID, so lots of new contact with people. And then before that, you know, literally never leave the higher education bubble particularly. So I've been kind of forced to explain it to people who don't know anything about what we do at all. So what I say to them is, it's a newspaper for people who work in universities. That's what I say to them, which is kind of true. We publish, you know, the daily briefing is our newspaper. It's kind of our our, you know, guiding star, you know, our entire working week is sort of built around that. We're always publishing it every day, whether from the second it goes out at 8 a.m., we're working on the one the next day. So it's, you know, it's always going, it's always there. And that gives us a kind of routine. It gives us kind of like, you know, a way to structure our time and our thinking. But that's, so it is our newspaper. For people in the sector, I say, you know, what we're trying to do is improve the quality of higher education debate. And we do that, you know, through any means necessary. and every tool in the arsenal, and that's where it's led us to the weekly podcast. It's led us to big in-person events, our festival Wonkfest, which
is coming back, I'm
working on it right now. I'm working on it and I'm hoping to bring it back in autumn of 2023.
Fantastic.
After COVID hiatus and everything else. So, you know, as I say, any means necessary to kind of open up, democratize, if you will, as well. So, I mean, you know, one of the things I noticed about Wonky is, you know, we're not interested in seniority, really, because the sector is so interested in it, in hierarchy. It's such an obvious decision for us just to put that all aside and say, hold on a second. No, we're interested in the ideas, your quality of contribution. The HE Wonks, you know, and you can be a vice chancellor in HE Wonk, you can be a registrar in HE Wonk, you could be president of a student union in HE Wonk. We're interested in, as I say, the quality of the contribution. And I think that's a bit of a reaction to the, you know, the sector's very hierarchical approach to things. And we do that very consciously.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that makes Wonky rather special, actually, because, you know, you look through the contributors over, you know, over quite a period of time, there is genuine diversity there across the sector. And many of them are, in fact, the vast majority of them are not the great and the good by any stretch of the imagination, but they are people who've worked in the sector or know about the sector or have lived in the sector, who've got ideas and got thoughts and got opinions and got views, which are different and interesting. And, you know, what you do is, you know, make those rise to the surface in a way that they wouldn't otherwise, which I think is absolutely commendable.
I mean, I think it's, you know, in some cases taken for granted, in that, you know, I think for a lot of people coming into the sector, they don't imagine a world, but, you know, before Wonky, but, you know, more of your career has been pre-Wonky than post-Wonky, right? And you were very early to blogging. You know, registrarism existed long before Wonky did, and that was very unusual at the time. I mean, you know, just putting yourself out there, putting your head above the parapet, when I think a lot of people were told, you know, you're civil servant, essentially. Yeah. You know, that's how you need to behave, and it's all beneath the iceberg. You know, and as a result of that, I thought, you know, policy making in the HE is too big, it's too important to be left to, you know, people beneath that iceberg, you know, just the you know, behind closed doors, no external kind of input, definitely no student input, but, you know, very much kind of, you know, a club. And part of the reason for Wonky's existence is to open up that policy conversation. The biggest thing that has changed, though, along the way, is that, you know, we look back at, I mentioned 2011, David Willetts. Since then, you know, we've had Joe Johnson and his green paper and the white paper and then the piece of legislation, you know, and criticisms of all of that, you know, might be fair. The point is, there are serious politicians having a serious attempt at making policy in higher education. Unfortunately, ever since that, we've had politicians who are essentially completely random or actually malign. And policy has become kind of random and kind of stupid on a ministerial level. I mean, some of the stuff, you know, just listen, we've just had Conservative Party conference this week, you know, listening to our, you know, minister, it's not even an HE minister, but, you know, she has HE in her title, talking about Harry Potter degrees and all academia, universities, and all this absolute nonsense. You know, it's a world away from the David Willetts's and Joe Johnson's. And as kind of a result of that, Wonky's had to shift a little bit and morph a bit to what, you know, you might describe a bit more something akin to a trade publication, in that we spend a lot more time talking about what goes on inside universities and making that better, than we do about the policy environment, because that's kind of where the action is. Because the policy environment is kind of mad, and kind of random, and kind of annoying a lot of the time, and not very impactful beyond kind of a surface level. So yes, we're still policy, you know, give us a morsel of policy, please. You know, we'll be absolutely thrilled here at Wonky Towers. But you know, it's no longer kind of the guiding star in that respect, because you know, there's such little of it, and when it comes, some of it is very hard to take in good faith, and properly digest. But we do our very best.
I think that's right. I think you certainly do. But I mean I think there will, as we move closer, there must be, as we move closer to the next general election, there must be, you know, because there is a vacuum in terms of that HE policy environment. So there must be a space for people to contribute in a meaningful way to how we see the future of our sector, both in terms of, you know, funding and regulation and growth and research, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm optimistic that you'll be able to have more influence in that space. But I do think the thing that you pointed out about the activities which go on inside universities, I think, you know, contributors to Monkey have actually, you know, provided a lot more, which feels like it relates a lot more, particularly to professional services staff in universities, which I think is, you know, is really valuable. And that feels to me that there's been a shift or an expansion of the brief over the years, which from my perspective is very welcome.
Yeah, that's it's for everyone that works in universities, but I guess the people who are most interested in you know, policy, regulation, administration, management, leadership, those kind of questions. I mean, yeah, a lot is weighted towards that. That said, you know, the debates we've had really since COVID, particularly about what happens in the classroom. And, you know, if you look at things like our research on belonging at university, you know, the way that, you know, like we would say, anyways, this is not a welfare issue. You know, this is an academic issue. It's student sense of belonging comes from you know, the most powerful place it comes from is their course, and the interaction they have with their with the academics that lead it. You know, the dividing line is not as clear cut as all that, you know, and I think the best of what came out of the pandemic has been a real collective sense of how to tackle some of those issues and really think deeply about it. And, you know, the best of Wonky is when we get a mixture of ideas and input from across the spectrum of academics, managers, administrators, because, you know, it's one sector and everyone needs to work together.
Absolutely. So we're running out of time now, Mark, but a couple of final questions from me. First of all, I mean, in terms of thinking about the future, I mean, if we're re-recording this in 5 years' time, what will we be saying about, you know, Wonky's presence then, do you think? What will it feel and look like? How big and amazing will Wonky be then?
Well, it's not so, I'm not so interested in size, actually. You know, it's not, I'm not, you know, not here to build an empire, you know, for the sake of it. I'm actually more interested in doing kind of almost the opposite, which is, so, you know, we set up Wonky SUs a few years ago, and that was really successful because it sort of brought together a community of people, as a sort of subset of the Wonky community, and it brought them together. And then we do some very explicit things for that community that don't exist on the rest of kind of Wonky's platform and all the rest of its subscriptions. And, you know, what we're interested in doing is looking at where those other communities exist, perhaps cutting them in slightly different ways to the ways they've done in the past, because we're not looking to tread on anyone's toes or repeat anything that anyone else has done, at, you know, in the sector. So, you know, you'll never see us set up a kind of professional network or something just for, you know, that would compete against an existing one. But what we are interested in is finding communities of practice inside higher education and bringing them together, learning from them and providing services for them that both enhance their kind of professional lives and also enhance Wonky and our understanding of the sector. And we've got a few under active development and have been actually for a little while. It's something that will take quite, you know, take some time to get right, but it's sort of, you know, sort of kind of, it's a reverse funnel. You know, I'm not looking to grow Wonky and its, you know, reach kind of in an unreasonable way. I'm actually looking to focus in on you know, really specific parts of the higher education sector, understand everything about it and do some interesting work inside it, and drill down a bit further.
Which all sounds really interesting. So I look forward to seeing more of that in due course. And one final thing then, Mark. I mean, you've seen an awful lot of the higher education sector over the years, good, bad and ugly. If you were to pick one interesting, quirky, weird, strange, amusing, unusual thing that you've picked up over the years, what would it be that you could share?
I do like the pageantry. I'm a real sucker for the gowns, the hats, the colours, the maces and the various different props. It is ludicrous in 2022 that any of that still exists. But it is so distinctive, and you know, it's very, and students love it, and there's very little to dislike about it. And I think, you know, some of the sector's great kind of ridiculous traditions of pageantry are, you know, need to be celebrated and kept, and I think probably always will be there. It's very hard to imagine a world where all of those kind of gets assumed into a kind of grey matter, which, you know, I think some people might prefer it as. But, you know, for as long as there are people who care about keeping that alive, I'm very happy.
Right. I completely agree. Let's hear it for the maces and the floppy hats. Mark, it's been an absolute delight talking to you. Thanks ever so much for your time, and really enjoyed it. And good luck to Wonky in the future.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you for having me. And thank you for your hard work on Wonky and registrarism over the years.
That's all then from this episode of University Registrars Talking About Stuff. There will be another one along before you know it. And in the meantime, if you can't get enough of this kind of thing, there is an extensive back catalogue of previous conversations with University Registrars talking about lots of different stuff. Until the next time then.